Get ready to jump off Zod. We're going to get you with the hard count.
Come on!
Hosted by two guys who babble more than Manning at the line of scrimmage.
Man, right, orange, purple!
Here's Aaron Nagler.
Don't shut me up!
And Andrew Garda.
I'm friggin' velvety smooth.
And here we go.
Here we go again. Another edition of the Hard Count. Another week of NFL football in the books. I'm Andrew Garda, and like I said, this is the Hard Count brought to you by CheeseheadTV.com. And we are going solo tonight, as Mr. Aaron Nagler had a school function. Mr. Fancy Pants, school function, and couldn't make it tonight. Packers transplant, stuff like that. Every once in a while, I'm going to be flowing solo, but that's fine. There's a lot to talk about, as always. Another week in the books, like I said. A fantastic week of football, yet again. I mean, really, it's almost like each week ratchets up the excitement. I didn't think it could be better or more exciting, but each week I feel like the NFL is saying, no, wait, we could take it up another notch. And we're going to talk about a bunch of the games around the league. But first, is it me or is there an awful lot of whining in the NFL today? I know there's no crying in baseball, but there apparently is a lot of complaining in NFL play. And of course, one person I'm talking about is someone you've probably already heard. Another is a story I was just reading on ProFootballTalk.com, which, as I've said before, should be a sponsor for the show. We mention them enough. Mr. Florio, Mr. Rosenthal, where's the dollars? You know my number. Give me a call. Anyway, so we're going to talk about both of those things. First, Michael Vick. Now, I will grant you that Vick gets hit a lot. And, I wrote a bunch of stuff this weekend on it over a Bleacher Report, and I talked about it from the press box today on Cheesehead TV. So I'm well aware. You know, there are a lot of factors to why Monsieur Vick keeps getting knocked on his rear end. And it's everything from the offensive line not playing incredibly well, the coaches who didn't put together a great offensive line. I mean, they drafted Danny Watkins. He hasn't seen the field really much yet. A first-round draft pick, you want him in there pretty immediately, even if it's on the right side. That hasn't really happened all that much. They have a rookie center. They've got a couple journeyman guys on there. Jason Peters is the most outstanding guy they have, and when he's in space and when he's on his game, he could be a fantastic downfield blocker. He can pass protect. He's just one man. All right, Brent Celek, the tight end, has been kept in to block. That hasn't worked all that well. I mean, hell, week two, Vic got hit by his own guy and concussed. This weekend, he got hit by numerous Giants. I mean, he was just hammered all night. Now some of that is the offensive line. Some of that is the coaching who did not. They didn't draft the right players. They didn't add enough to the line. And then now we're looking at a situation where it doesn't feel like they're doing enough to protect him either via play calling and stuff. Although this is a team that is running an awful lot. I mean, you look at LeSean McCoy. He's been averaging near 20 carries a game. You can't do that much more than that. But there's also some Vic responsibility, of course. Vic will pull the ball down, it seems like, quicker this year. Get outside the pocket, makes those runs, doesn't hook slide. You know, runs, looks for contact. I mean, I guess he doesn't look for contact, but contact finds him. When you're running the way Vic does, I'm sorry, you're going to get hit. So all of those things combined, the guy's getting more QB hits than anything else. You know, it was pointed out to me by the guys over at Pro Football Focus that they're not giving up a ton of sacks and not as much QB hits. A lot of his QB hits are because he freelances. So, he has more than a modicum of responsibility in terms of him getting hit. You ask Michael Vick, you're going to get a different story, of course. He's saying, I'm not getting the flags I should. Every play I'm getting knocked on my rear. I'm not getting the 15-yard penalties everyone else is. And, of course, whenever that happens, you get an awful lot of people who bring up the race card. Oh, Michael Vick's not getting the same penalties that a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning, when he's not having his neck fused and injected with goat pee or whatever the hell is going on with him right now. oh, you know, Vic, there's a real obvious reason for it. You can take a look. Well, you know, that's a load of crap. And I'm going to tell you it's a load of crap for the same reason that Trent Dilfer, and the fact that I'm agreeing with Trent Dilfer disturbs me like you would not believe right now. I mean, Dilfer knows stuff. Not my favorite analyst. That said, talk to Ben Roethlisberger. Talk to Matt Ryan, who got his clock cleaned this weekend. Just absolutely killed. No penalty. Aaron Rodgers. I mean, hello. Aaron Rodgers gets run all the time. You know, Rodgers. The difference with Rodgers is he doesn't get hit as much because he spends more time in the pocket. He throws the ball away. He is a mobile quarterback, not as mobile as Vic. I mean, nobody's as mobile as Vic. But he's a mobile quarterback who works the pocket better. Has a little better offensive line. You know what? These are all guys who don't get those 15-yard penalty calls that Tom Brady get. Or gets. Since there should be an S on the end of that. But the common denominator in those guys is they're all white. Right? Let's be honest. This 15-yard penalty crap, I mean, as it is, quarterbacks are protected so much, we might as well have flags. You do have to protect them. There are times when they're helpless players. I get it. It's overboard. That said, you know what? Sometimes it's poor officiating. You're talking about a judgment call these guys have to make right away. Just right away. Instantaneously. And the fact of the matter is sometimes they miss. All right? Mike Vick feels like he's being picked on, that he's not getting what he's supposed to. Dude, join the club. All right? There are T-shirts. David Carr would like a word for you in the hallway. I mean, it's ridiculous. Now, I get he's frustrated. And clearly, PR people told him to shut his yap because he came out and said, you know, I was upset. I'm really sorry. You won't hear from me again. You know what? He should raise awareness. He has a good point. All right? It's not equally administered any more than the fines are for a guy like James Harrison. But, man, the fans who bring up the race thing, let me clear this up right now. There's racism in sports. I know. Hold on to your hats, Thelma. It gets worse. There's still racism in society. It exists. There's sexism, too. It happens. It exists. It's out there. This is not one of those things. There's not some grand conspiracy that Michael Vick isn't going to get flagged. If he doesn't get a call every once in a while, it could be the dog thing. I'll give you that. Man was a criminal. I could see that coloring someone's judgment. But ultimately, no. These guys are paid to do a job. And you know what? They screw it up sometimes. We've seen it many times when they've hosed a call. And they are probably doing a poor job sometimes when Vick gets hit. Just like Rodgers, just like Matt Ryan this weekend, just like Ben Roethlisberger, just like countless quarterbacks. Hell, Mark Sanchez got his bell rung a couple times this weekend that really should have been flagged, and they weren't. Sometimes they let the guys play. Sometimes it's a bad decision. Most of the time, though, it is the decision, and it is not based on race. As much as we want to make everything about that, sometimes it's not. Again, there's racism. There's racism in sports. There's racism in media. There's racism in society. It happens. It exists. I am not blind to it. This is not one of those things. So I respect Mike Vick, and I hope to God that Philadelphia figures a way to keep him from getting killed. I have said from jump that he is not going to last the season. It's not going to happen. He is not going to be complete for the entire season. Maybe he pulls out 16 games, but he is not going to be in any shape by the end of it. And if he runs through 16 games getting beat the way he is, then Philadelphia has no chance of winning the Super Bowl. None. He will not be able to function at the level they need him to be in a Super Bowl game. I'd say he may not make the NFC Championship game. They need to find a way to protect him. He needs to find a way to not take the big hit, and the coaches need to find a way to shore that offensive lineup. This is the thing that I don't get. And this is an offensive line thing. This isn't an Eagles thing. The Jets are guilty of it to an extent, too. Nick Mangold out this weekend, you saw a problem with the offensive line. I think it's Matt O'Shea from the Giants center still out there. There are offensive linemen out there that can step in that have experience. An experienced lineman is going to make a huge difference for a guy like Vic. Make a huge difference for a guy like Mark Sanchez. Sanchez came out and said, hey, it's going to be a difficult weekend. Mangold makes a lot of calls at the line. I rely on him sometimes. This is going to be difficult to do because he is phenomenal. You put a guy with some experience in front of Michael Vick at the center position, which next to the left tackle, the most important position on the offensive line. These are guys who call plays. These are guys who bark out commands to the other linemen. They call blitzes. They call things they see from the defense. And oh, by the way, and the Cowboys can tell you this, they also have to snap the ball properly. All of this. Now, rookies may be phenomenal coming into the league, but when you've got a guy named Michael Vick at one of the most critical positions on the team, and you've got a rookie at one of the other very important positions on the team, it's going to end up being that you're going to have problems.
Speaking of problems, by the way, as you may notice, all of a sudden there's a change in quality of sound here. That would be because I figured out that for some reason, and this is behind-the-scenes stuff I'm sure you don't care about, but for some reason the webcam that I had decided it would take over my computer, and this program decided to use that mic and not my good mic. So, sorry for the first 10 minutes of the show, which sounds a lot like you're in a tunnel, and I'm very far away. Anyway, back to what I was saying. I mean, if you're running an offensive line where you have okay guys, but not great, and a rookie at center, you're going to have problems. You're going to have problems with anybody at quarterback, much less a guy who at any time could just freelance a play, which is what Michael Vick does. I mean, you're not going to change him. You shouldn't. That's the whole point of having Michael Vick. The whole point is that at any time he could be deadly with his feet, and the man's throwing the ball better. He's like a true dual threat. But if you can't have offensive linemen that can kind of see it coming or move with him or at least give him a little extra block or a little extra time, you know, guys, that you're going to have this happen. And this is why, you know, if I can go fantasy football for you for just a second, this is why I warned people against taking Vic early. And this is why I said first round Michael Vick is a terrible idea. You know, for your first round pick, yeah, the upside's huge. But all I was hearing is, well, if Michael could make a season, well, that's awesome. Yeah, if you were extrapolating his, 13 games or 14 games last year to 16, he'd break every record under the sun. Look at the offensive numbers so far. All right, if you look at Michael Vick, and then look at Tom Brady, who got like three rounds later. A lot of drafts, actually. It was a lot of heavy quarterback action in many fantasy drafts. Look at Tom Brady's numbers. Look at Matt Stafford's numbers. Was it worth going after Vic like that? I don't know. You tell me at the end of the season, we'll have this discussion again. But anyway, back to real football. I do think Mike has a point. I do think Vic has a point in terms of not getting calls he probably should sometimes. Like I said, though, a lot of other quarterbacks who make that claim. You know what a lot of other teams can't make the claim? They can't make the claim that the Dallas Cowboys are making against the Washington Redskins. I don't know if you guys noticed on Monday Night Football, but Phil Costa, who was the center for the Cowboys, couldn't hike the ball worth crap. He was terrible. Hiked the ball before Romo was ready. Hiked the ball because, you know, when Romo, like, was in the middle of cadence. Now, the Cowboys, and with the first two opening stories here, I almost feel like I should have the sound effect of a baby crying. If I can find one, you may hear one now. But The Redskins are saying, or the Cowboys are saying the Redskins were cheating. Now, this is coming from Michael David Smith over at Pro Football Talk. Again, Florio, Rosenthal, call us. You should be kicking us like at least a beer every once in a while. According to MDS, NFL rules prohibit defensive players from making disconcerting signals by pretending to call out the quarterback's cadence. But Romo said after the game that's exactly what some Redskins defensive linemen were doing. We've got to get the snap thing worked out, Romo said. Costa said the D-line kept calling out the snap count. We'll get that worked out. We'll tell the league and see if that's something that can be fixed, because you're not supposed to be able to do that. Can't have that happen. Shouldn't be in that situation. ESPNDallas.com suggested that Stephen Bowen, who used to be a Cowboys defensive end, now plays for the Redskins, might have helped them learn Romo's cadences to fool Costa into snapping the ball. Now, you know, it is pointed out in the article that those signals happen, rarely called, and Matt Hasselbeck over with the Titans was accusing the Broncos of doing the same thing on Sunday. At least Costa stands up and take it, because I'm sorry. All right, this absolutely to me sounds like whining. I'm sorry. You're telling me that at home, in a nurturing environment, I guess, if you want to call it, a home environment that's got your back, that somehow your center was fooled by the Redskins. Seriously, guys? Seriously? This is what you're hanging your hat on for crappy center play? Oh, they cheated. Oh, they're calling out our snap games. Oh, I lost my purse. Come on, guys. Seriously? That's ridiculous. Even if they were doing it, you shouldn't be fooled by it. You're a freaking NFL player. You practice with Tony Romo. Now, I wanted to call him Costanza, but Costa's defense, Romo didn't practice all the week, so he didn't get as much time with him as he normally would, but come on, guys. All right, even if it happened, it shouldn't be happening. At least Costa stood up and basically blamed himself. He's like, I've got to take the blame for it. Right now, get that problem fixed without a doubt. Move on to the Lions. All right, if Costa can't handle the Redskins, Ndamukong Suh is going to destroy him. Again, MDS pointed that out, but the fact of the matter is the Lions' defensive line is going to crush him, and they're not going to need to cheat, or allegedly cheat, to do it. I mean, Tony Romo got hammered like a bridegroom on bachelor party night. I mean, he was just wrecked. And he's in a lot of pain. Those ribs are bothering him. It wouldn't shock me if the lungs bothering him. He had problems getting up. And man, was he pissed. He was yelling at... Yeah, well, he was yelling at Costa an awful lot, but he was yelling at a lot of his players. I think the only person he wasn't pissed at was probably Dez Bryant, who didn't see near enough plays, and Jason Witten. But a lot of his guys let him down. But, yeah, so... Vic... Cowboys, I don't know, who gets the Whiny Baby Award this week? I say it's a toss-up. There's probably more than enough wine to go with all the cheese. But I'm going around the NFL this week. Shouldn't be much of a problem. So, we're going to move on, and let's talk a little games. Let's take a little break from this, and we'll move on to some games that I saw this weekend that I was impressed with. Or kept me on the seat, on the edge of my seat. And let's start with my favorite place. And Nagler's not here to say I told you so. So I'm going to say it for him. He told me so. I think I'm done betting against Buffalo. Holy crap. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, Tom Brady turned the ball over four times. Oh, my God, four touchdowns and 387 yards. You know what? The four touchdowns, the four interceptions suck. But it could be much worse. But Buffalo, coming from 21, they were at halftime. It was 21-10. 14 points down in the first quarter. The defense woke up and shut New England down the second half. I mean, didn't completely shut them down, 10 more points, but it just wasn't enough. And meanwhile, Ryan Fitzpatrick, oh my God, 369 yards, two touchdowns. He had two picks.
brings Buffalo back from the brink and takes down the New England Patriots, which, as a recovering Jet fan, I highly applaud. Rex Ryan is probably sending the Bills like a nice fruit basket or something. It's unfortunate the Jets couldn't get their Oakland Raider Jones on and got slapped this weekend, but that we may or may not talk about that a little later. It's a little hurtful. But this is how good Tom Brady's doing, by the way. It's another almost 400-yard games, four touchdowns, and all we talk about is the four interceptions. What's most interesting to me about this game is how vulnerable the defense is for the New England Patriots. A good quarterback, which the Amish Rifle is, Ryan Fitzpatrick. I wonder why Cecil Lammy from Football Guys calls him the Amish Rifle. I'll have to text him and ask, because Fitzpatrick, I figure there's an Irish joke in there somewhere. But anyway, you know, Fitzpatrick's a pretty good quarterback. It's not great, not elite, but a good quarterback. But New England just could not stop him in the second half. They're having problems stopping teams. The New England Patriots are vulnerable, and I would not be shocked if they do not take this division this year. It's always theirs for the taking, but it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to pull it off this year. Meanwhile, the Bills, one of two teams, the subject of much excitement in my mind, and part of my From the Press Box article at Cheesehead TV this week. Just fantastic. I mean, Fred Jackson's one of the most underrated backs in the league. Stevie Johnson got back on his game. I mean, just across the board, this has been a really incredible run so far. See if they can keep it up. And of course, I mentioned my article today. I'll mention it again because let's talk the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Kitty Cats meow no more. Now, the crazy thing about this game is that Minnesota runs out to a 20-point lead in the first half. How the hell does that happen? Well, it happens because Adrian Peterson rushes a lot. You know what Adrian Peterson didn't do in the second half? Yeah, you guessed it. Didn't rush all that much. So much so that he was even upset about it. Adrian finished 78 yards and a touchdown, and he could have done so much more. I mean, the Lions had an answer for everything but Peterson. It's hard to have an answer for Peterson. He's an elite back. The fact that the offensive line is crap, that McNabb is horrible, that Harvin was vomiting in a garbage can somewhere, none of that matters. Because you still can't really stop Peterson. Matt Stafford, 378 yards, two touchdowns. Wait, the Detroit Lions got off the mat, scored almost 23 unanswered points. I mean, the Vikings added a field goal. It went into overtime. Lions win. But I've said for a while, you know, if Matt Stafford is healthy, this is a fierce offense. What has surprised me is how quickly the defense has, for the most part, gelled. You know, the first half was ugly. But the Lions look good. Look like a fantastic team. A couple other games that I thought were really interesting. I mean, the Houston-New Orleans shootout. Two quarterbacks, 370-plus yards, three touchdowns each. Breeze, a pair of picks. I'm still waiting for New Orleans to run the ball. They're really not. Ultimately, it's a situation, I think, where they just haven't had to. Well, they're running the ball a little bit, but you know, Darren Sproles, a couple of big runs. Mark Ingram looked good, 9 carries, 38 yards. That's a 4.2 average and a touchdown. You know, Pierre Thomas is still in there. But overall, they're just not running the ball all that much. And I wonder if that's hurting them a little bit. I know they want to go deep into the playoffs, and they may be saving Ingram for that, or Thomas. So that was an exciting game, of course. Matt Schaub looking good. The Houston Texans looking good. Secondary torched, but if it's going to be torched, the fact that the New Orleans Saints did it is not really that big a deal. Moving on to San Diego, who squeaks one by the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs still look horrible, by the way. horrible. Even though they managed 17 points against San Diego, that's just more about San Diego than Kansas City. Matt Cassel is just bad. 176 yards and two touchdowns. Just doesn't look good. I don't, you know, they're starting to use Dexter McCluster a little bit. Dwayne Bowe's doing it. It's just not good in Kansas City. Well, San Diego, Phillip Rivers had an off game. Ryan Matthews had a great game. 21 rushes for 98 yards and a pair of touchdowns. He's taking a bell cow job away from Mike Tolbert. But you'll see Tolbert get a lot of carries from here on out. And as long as we're on Cheesehead TV, I guess I can mention Green Bay and Chicago, mostly for the fact that Jermichael Finley, 7 catches, 85 yards, is all right. That's okay. 3 touchdowns. You know, after the second one, don't you, like, I don't know, cover him? Good work, Chicago. Green Bay looking very solid right now. I like what I've seen from them. Brian Bulaga going down with an injury is a little bit disconcerting, but he may be back. It wasn't as serious as it really looked. Of course, we touched on the Dallas-Washington game earlier. Pittsburgh-Indianapolis. How Pittsburgh did not run away with this game is beyond me. Mike Wallace had a fantastic game. 5 catches, 144 yards, and a touchdown. A die looking good for the Colts, but nothing else is. Good Lord, I hope the rumor of Brett Favre going to the Colts was... I don't know. Do I want it to be true? Yeah, I kind of do. Why not? The place is on fire. Why not? I want to know how Arizona lost to Seattle, by the way. Seattle beats Arizona 13-10. Larry Fitzgerald, 64 yards and a touchdown. Tavares Jackson ran for 20 yards and a touchdown. When Jackson's best stat is the 4 runs he made, that's not good. It's not good to the tune of 171 yards. Sacked 4 times. Threw an interception, no touchdowns. Kevin Cobb, looking like the Kevin Cobb in Philly, 252 yards, sacked 3 times, 1 touchdown but 2 picks. This was like nobody wanted to win this game. It was ugly, ugly, ugly. And continues to be bad in Seattle. Although Sidney Rice, 109 yards, it's good bounce back from his injury. But overall, that was an ugly game. And I don't know how Arizona manages to lose to the Seahawks. Oh, and by the way, because Aaron will bring it up if I don't. Yeah, Tennessee beat Denver. And Orton did not look particularly good. 173 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. While Matt Hasselbeck, without Kenny Britt, because he's done for the season, 311 yards and 2 TDs. Where's Chris Johnson? I really don't know. The only thing that really saved his game was some great receiving out of the backfield, but something's up with him. But then again, I told you guys, when you hold out and miss training camp, this is what happens sometimes. And that's what's going on with Mr. Chris Johnson. We may touch on a couple more of these games. Maybe the Gabbert-Newton affair. Or talk a little bit about how Cincinnati continues to look awful. But for now, we're going to move on and talk a little more news and notes from around the league. And while we didn't talk about Jacksonville, hey, let's talk about their potential eventual relocation to Los Angeles. I'm sorry, I only do that to annoy the Jags fans. Apparently, though, Farmers Field has been greenlit. That's a Hollywood term, because we are talking L.A. Has been greenlit by the California governor, Jerry Brown. Yeah, in case you don't know what Farmers Field is, Farmers Field is the as-yet unbuilt, ungreenlit, really, and non-existent stadium in downtown Los Angeles. So, on Tuesday, that would be Governor Jerry Brown signed into law a provision that allows any challenges to Farmers Field, that is the non-existent, hasn't been built yet, but does have a name, football stadium downtown in Los Angeles, challenges to Farmers Field environmental impact statement to be resolved within 175 days. this is the interesting thing. And I wonder, in some respects, if ultimately this is in part because they're just trying to get the economy going in Los Angeles. And it wouldn't shock me. I mean, the other stadium, the one without the name, the City of Industry Stadium, already had something like this. But actually, it's more powerful. It was like some sort of special legislative dispensation, according to the Mike Florio article in Pro Football Talk. And understand, having lived in Los Angeles for a long time, I am somewhat numb to these stories. I mean, I'm not there anymore, but these stories, at some point, I'm still waiting for the Coliseum Commission to show up like Jason at the end of a Friday the 13th movie for one more stab. I mean, they're usually the ones who screw this up by coming and saying, no, wait, we're good. And then the NFL just goes, you know what? Screw you guys. You can't get on the same page. Screw you. But Brown basically came out and said, it's time for big ideas and big projects like this. This is a way to get people working. Ding, 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 ding. As a government, we're not building anything. That's what the private sector and individuals do, but we can pave the way. You know what? You guys got thousands of miles of stretch of road. Infrastructure. I don't know. This is what I've been saying for years now. Rebuild some infrastructure, guys. You want to create jobs, rebuild infrastructure. When you leave it up to the private sector, you find out that the private sector doesn't always take care of you because a lot of the times they're in very cheap countries who they can get to do things very cheaply. But you can't build Farmers Field in Mexico and then move it up to Los Angeles. So, says, I'm signing a bill focused on the stadium and the convention center and another broadly focused on cutting red tape all over the state. We're going to remove some regulations, speed things up, while also protecting the environment. We have to do it in a practical way because there are too damn many regulations. In other words, man, this is going to sound more political than I mean it to, but look, big business needs some help. Let's just circumnavigate the rules for big business so we can get this going. Now, in this particular case, I'm all for creating jobs in Los Angeles. And I think a downtown stadium isn't a bad idea. I'm not really sure how parking or tailgating or any of that crap will work. But ultimately, I think it'll create jobs. I think it is a plus. And I think that LA could use a football team. I have my opinions on how that should work. But ultimately, I think it should happen. All that being said, you know, you can go through all of this and this can still fall apart. But it is beginning to look a lot like Los Angeles may actually get an NFL team. Now, I don't know which one. I really don't know that the Jags will move. Of course, Vikings are always talked about, and that stadium deal is kind of imploding. The Bills, I don't know. If they have a great season, they're not going to move, and I don't know that they'd move anyway. I don't think that Wilson wants to move them. The Raiders are always a threat, but frankly, the way Al Davis has treated any city he's moved from, screw him. If I'm Los Angeles, screw him. I don't want anything to do with him. He hosed Oakland when he went to L.A. He hosed L.A. to go back to Oakland. Screw him. Like, he's just going to do it again. If L.A. lets the Raiders back down to L.A., then L.A. deserves everything they get. And it'll end badly because Al will at some point screw them and leave. That's my opinion. Yeah, I don't mind the Raiders as an organization. They're easy to mock. But I really don't mind them. Frankly, though, I was there. Everybody talks that LA couldn't support the Raiders. Supported the Raiders just fine. They needed to do it something about a 100,000 seat stadium, but they were doing fine. Al thought he had a sweetheart deal up in Oakland. Turned out it's not as good as he thought it was, but he got a lot of money out of Oakland. Now that well is drying up. Yeah, he's thinking about LA again. The 49ers, which I just don't see. I mean, I'm just reading off some of the stuff Pro Football Talk is saying. Again, I said the Jaguars, nah. The Rams, they're not going to go back. The Chargers are the most viable possibility. Sorry. Stumbling over my words there. They've got a pretty big fan base in Los Angeles. It's not that big a move for them up there. And they can't get a stadium deal done. It'd be moving, but not really moving. But ultimately, people have talked expansion. I was at a a new media conference this weekend called Blogs with Balls. And it's one thing that I talked to a lot of people about. I was one of the NFL guys, so I got a lot of NFL questions because we're in the middle of the season. And, you know, why don't they expand? I think they should expand. Why doesn't the NFL expand? The NFL doesn't want to expand. The NFL is completely happy with the teams it has. I did have a conversation with someone that we were in disagreement because he said that he felt like the talent pool was there, you could expand. I don't know that I agree with that. I mean, you've got a situation where there aren't 32 viable starting quarterbacks, really. And I think that you're looking at a situation where I just don't think the talent pool right now is as thick as it used to be. In part because there are more teams. And the NHL overexpanded, and it hurt the sport. Didn't hurt the sport near as much as the strike did, but it hurt the sport. And I don't want to see that happen to the NFL, and I'm afraid it might. Now, you do have the CFL. You do have the UFL. You got a lot of guys in college football. With small schools, people are starting to look at the small schools more and more. The scouts really take it seriously in a way that they didn't before Marcus Golston. But ultimately, I just don't think there's enough to expand. And I think that, yeah, you know, it's nice to have an extra $1.5 billion or whatever the owners would get. I think adding another personality to the mix, you'd have to add two teams. They're not going to unbalance it. So you'd end up with 34 teams, and I just don't know that they're going to do that. And I know there's talk about putting two teams in Los Angeles, but they won't do it at the same time. So I don't foresee an expansion there. But it's going to happen. Los Angeles will get a football team. I think at this point, you know, I was talking about the Coliseum Commission and all that. I think at this point, it's not inevitable because nothing is, but I think there's a pretty damn good bet that it's going to happen. You know, you got two stadiums right on the verge of being made. Really, the Coliseum Commission's been incredibly quiet. And to steal a Rush Limbaugh phrase, the NFL is very desirous of a franchise in Los Angeles. It's a huge TV market. I think part of the hesitation, a lot of people keep saying it's the leverage that they have for new stadiums, but I think part of the hesitation is that they know it's not the easiest thing to get an LA team in there and then help it survive. I mean, getting a team in there, you're going up against a lot of people who haven't had a team in a long time. You've got Raider fans, you've got Charger fans, you've got Rams fans. All right, so you've got those segments. But, I mean, you have Jets fans, you have Steelers fans, you have Packer fans. You have a lot of fans of other teams. Now, people will still go to the games, but how rabid a following will you get if you move in a team? And, you know, on the other side, if you expand, and again, I don't think they will, but if you did expand, you have a situation where you have a team that might lose for years. And I got to tell you, LA's got gorgeous weather. The Lakers, maybe the NBA never comes back. I have no idea. But, you know, they've got other things. They've got the Dodgers. They've got the Angels down south. They're in Anaheim. It's far enough away to be almost a different state, really, when it comes down to how long it takes to get there. But they've got other stuff to do. And I'm not saying it needs to be like a Super Bowl winning franchise right off the bat, but they have to be competitive. Got to be competitive. This is not like college football where, you know, UCLA packs them in a lot at the Rose Bowl because you've got a lot of rabid students and alums, you know, or USC, which used to put a lot of people in the Coliseum for a lot of different games, even when they sucked. It's not the same thing with the NFL. Now, mind you, you know, here's the other attraction for the NFL in Los Angeles, and then we'll move on, because I'm sure I'm boring the crap out of some people. But ultimately, there's a lot of business and a lot of money in Los Angeles. All right, you know, the economy sucks, but there's the entire film industry. There's the record industry. There's the entertainment industry. Put it all together. You know, studios, films, TV, whatever. You've got some other fairly big businesses that function out of there that are still surviving despite the economy. There's a lot of money there. Now, you may figure that fans are the ones who fill stadiums, and that is true to an extent, but trust me when I say that predominantly, it's the luxury boxes that they want and the PSLs. I guarantee you there are PSLs. That, I can't imagine any argument that I would get from any of you guys on the PSL issue. But there will be PSLs. And there's money there. So there's plenty of money for people to take in. The NFL's going to want a piece of it. They've just got to figure out how to make things interesting to start off and get people hooked. Should be interesting. It's going to happen probably in the next 5 years, I would guess. I don't know. Maybe at that point I'll be back in Los Angeles for something and finally see football. All right, briefly, because if you really want my thoughts on it, you could go to cheeseheadtv.com and read from the press box. But I really love this Joe Namath, Rex Ryan fight. Those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Joe Namath came out and said that the Raiders beat the Jets because Rex Ryan talks his team up too much. They started believing their hype, and they were overconfident. That would be ignoring the lack of Nick Mangold, the numerous hits on Mark Sanchez, which broke his nose, by the way, the occasionally poor choices of said Sanchez, the lack of a running game, the inability to get Santonio Holmes going, the inability to stretch the field. I could go on. The phenomenal play of Darren McFadden. I sound like I'm taking it away from the Raiders, but Darren McFadden exploded. I mean, if you're a Football Guys subscriber, go read the Jets-Raiders recap, because I did that. And I have to tell you, there are two players that I watched like repeatedly when I rewatched the game yesterday, and that's Denarius Moore, the rookie wide receiver, who had he had okay catches, but where he really shined was on a reverse, where he was going outside. 90% of the time on a reverse, when you have the wide receiver going outside, he keeps going regardless of blocking, regardless of anything. Just goes, it takes it outside, tries to get outside. The Jets had the outside. There was no way Moore was getting outside. Most wide receivers, I think, probably would have still done it. Moore saw it, read what was happening, cut inside, and made a couple of nifty moves for a pretty big gain. I mean, to me, that showed experience beyond what you expect from a rookie. And I just, every week, I get more impressed by that kid. And Darren McFadden, I don't know, the light switch went on, and this guy is just ridiculous. 171 yards on the ground, and a pulled groin, and wouldn't he? Like, after 171 yards, like, when you're bursting with that much awesome, you know, maybe that's when you get your groin pulled. I mean, that sounded wrong. That sounded so wrong. What I meant was, like, you expect some sort of muscle injury, like, when you do that much. Man, I wish I could have that moment back. I guess I could erase it, but you know what? Give you guys a chuckle. But, yeah, so it's ignoring all that stuff. Now, this is a very valid conversation, though. Why? Because, you know, we've long talked about Rex Ryan. Is his message ever going to get old? I mean, this is a team that has gone to the AFC Championship twice and lost twice. Like, at some point, if you don't get to the Super Bowl and then you don't win, like, is the message going to get stale? On the other hand, you know, Ryan's like, hey, Namath doesn't know our team. I think he'd be surprised with how much preparation we put into the game. And, you know, he's welcome to come by. I mean, he's a Jet. He'll always be a Jet. You know, he's one of the greatest Jets, but he doesn't know this team, and I disagree with him wholeheartedly. And I back Rex on that. I think the Jets tend to prepare for a game phenomenally. You know, this one got away from them, and they had a shot to win it at the end, and it was really close. Sanchez just came up a little short because he fell. Instead of, like, trying to stay on his feet, like, he sort of dove. It was a poor choice in some respects, but, you know, what are you going to do? It's the end of the game. You're trying to get that touchdown. You know, if you don't get it, you're done. It's fourth and goal. Didn't quite come up. But, you know, again, my biggest beef with this game, and getting off the Ryan Namath war for a minute, my biggest beef with this game is that you had a situation where the Jets went in expecting man, because that's what the Raiders played. The Raiders lost two players in the secondary, and the Jets started to see some zone coverage, which is, I think, what they'd like to see. I mean, I think they match up well with people on man, but zone coverage, you could find a seam sometimes. There's a little spaces to work with. The Jets just didn't seem to adjust their game plan. I mean, they stopped using Santonio Holmes. There was a good job on the coverage for him most of the time, but find a way to get the guy the ball. He's your playmaker, man. I mean, I like Burris. He's a big red zone target, but he doesn't have the speed and the agility that Holmes does. And Derek Mason's, he had a tremendous amount of targets, a lot of catches, but that's because we were doing dink and dunk again. I mean, this is yet another game where the Jets had a shot at maybe stretching the secondary a little bit, and they just don't. And it leaves you with a couple of questions. One, is a matter that they just feel like there's not enough chemistry on the team yet, like that they just haven't figured each other out. Two, is Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator? I mean, there have been a lot of discussions among Jet faithful for a long time, but whether Schottenheimer is creative enough in the offense, I don't know. Dink and dunk again this week, really? You know, against a secondary that got banged up all of a sudden? I don't know. I don't get it. And three, you know, we have questions about Sanchez. And Aaron and I talked about it last week, and I've talked about it a couple times. This is a year where he needs to take a step up. Doesn't seem to be doing it right now. I mean, he threw for a career-high yards, but he made some dumb throws. And he was way off on a couple of Dustin Keller throws, too. I mean, Keller had a lot of targets, but some of them were not really catchable. You know, on a critical fourth and two to Plaxico Burress, he threw it behind him. And maybe Burress could have gotten it with a little more effort, but wasn't a good throw. So we're really looking at a situation where, you know, is the offensive coordinator a guy that maybe needs to go? Is the quarterback maybe not as good as he could be? I mean, I think I still believe in Sanchez, but like I have said several times on this podcast, it's getting to the point where you really can't say, but he's still inexperienced. At this point, there are things that he should see that he doesn't, and I don't get it. And, you know, I'm going to be watching some Sanchez footage over the next couple weeks, but, you know, so far this season has not been phenomenal for him. He has not made that step he needed. Good first game, problematic second game despite the fact they won. Good and bad points for the third game. I don't know. We'll have to look at it. We'll have to take a look at it, and I'll get back to you guys with this one. I'm sure this will be the focus of something sometime soon. So, all right. So, even though Nagler's not here, I'm going to put myself on the hot spot, and let's do some picks, some NFL picks for week four. And, man, I can go in there and say that I'm going to guarantee the Bills, can't I? But I'm not going to spoil it. We'll get to the Bills soon enough, folks. Let's start in Philadelphia, as the Eagles meet the San Francisco 49ers. Now, the big question is whether Michael Vick will play or not. 49ers, 2-1, 1-0 on the road. Philadelphia, a stunning 1-2. At home, they did not win their only game at home. This is one of those difficult games, because you figure that if Vick's there, they're going to beat the 49ers. If Kafka's there, does that hold true? I think the Eagles need to make a decision really early this week. Decide whether Vic is going to play or not. I think Vic not playing isn't the worst thing in the world, because I think Kafka, with a week of practice, and this is why you need to decide this early, can win this game. San Francisco has been a little up and down, but I haven't been that impressed with their wins. I think that the Eagles take this game, and I think it's still going to be a very difficult season for them, but I don't think Vic plays. I think if they're smart, Vic doesn't play, but I think Philadelphia wins anyway. New Orleans at Jacksonville. Do I really need to answer this one, Aaron? Really? Seriously? Okay. New Orleans, 2-1 on the road. They lost their one road game. Jacksonville, 1-2, won their home game they had this year, but not this time. I don't think Blaine Gabbert has a chance. And I think that Drew Brees is going to throw for like 500 yards and 45 touchdowns. This is New Orleans in a laugher. Detroit on the road against Dallas. Detroit, as I said, 3-0. And Dallas, 2-1. They won, of course, the other night, their one home game against the Redskins. That said, Dallas is way too beat up to win this game. This is a road game I like. I think the Lions are going to run away with this one. Start throwing the ball hard early, and I don't think Dallas has the defense to keep up with them and to slow them down. Moving on, Buffalo at Cincinnati, another road game where I like the road team. Buffalo Bills 3-0, Cincinnati 1-2. Cincinnati is ugly. I do not believe in Andy Dalton. I do believe in Buffalo. I do believe in Fitzpatrick. I really hope I didn't jinx the Bills. Bills win this one. That's a 1 o'clock game. If you want to see tons of physical abuse, watch that game. And if you don't like horrifying destruction, then don't watch it, because Buffalo is going to beat down the Cincinnati Bengals. Washington at St. Louis. Man, another road game that I like the road team. Washington Redskins 2-1. They lost, of course, Dallas. They're one game on the road. St. Louis 0-3. 0-2 at home. Make that 0-3 at home. 0-4 overall. This is the Washington Redskins. Tim Hightower is going to have a very good day. You're going to see more of the rookie Helu. And Rex Grossman will continue making us wonder just what the hell happened to him in Chicago in the first place. Pittsburgh Steelers at the Houston Texans. Here is a situation where I do not like the road team. Pittsburgh has played relatively well. They are 1-1 on the road. Houston won their only home game. Of course, that was against the Colts. But still, Houston healthy. Andre Johnson looking good. Tate played well. The Tater tot in the ball. Owen Daniels still there and healthy. I like the Houston Texans. Pittsburgh, you know, Rashard Mendenhall plays well. Roethlisberger is always a threat. Wallace is incredible. I think that Houston's revamped secondary is going to be able to slow the Steelers down a little bit. I'm taking Houston at home in this one. Carolina-Chicago. Both teams 1-2. Carolina has lost their road game. Chicago is 1-1 at home. I do think that the Bears are going to be way too much for the Carolina Panthers. I think it's going to be another down game for Cam Newton, who I still think is a very good rookie quarterback. I just think he's going to have a hard time moving in against Chicago at home. So I'm taking Chicago in this one. The Minnesota Vikings at Kansas City, the Suck Bowl for this week. Minnesota 0-3, Kansas City 0-3. They both have lost road slash home. Kansas City is ugly. Minnesota is uglier, but Kansas City is ugliest of all. I think Adrian Peterson is way too much for this Kansas City defense, and I think that maybe this week Leslie Frazier will realize his error and run Peterson until his legs fall off. I'm going to take Minnesota in this one. I'm not going to watch it, and I pity those of you in Minnesota and Kansas City who have to. You have my condolences. Tennessee at Cleveland, both 2-1. Tennessee lost its one road game. Cleveland has split its home series. Montario Hardesty played very well for Cleveland this past weekend. Hopefully Hillis will be back, but it is a nice 1-2 punch for Cleveland. Their offense is coming together. Tennessee, Matt Hasselbeck played well even without Kenny Britt. Kenny Britt gone for the season with an ACL tear, I believe it was, yes. I think that Tennessee can fill in with the likes of Damian Williams and Nate Washington step up. I don't know what's going on with Chris Johnson. I'd like to say this is his get-right game, but I'm just not sure I see it. I think Tennessee is going to lose this one. I think it'll be close, but I think Cleveland pulls this one out at home and wins and becomes a 3-1 team, 2-1 at home. Into the afternoon games. The Rock'em Sock'em Robots that are the New York Giants coming home victorious, or going to Arizona, I should say, after leaving Philadelphia victorious. Arizona coming off a humbling loss this past weekend to Seattle. And I got to tell you, I'm not really sure it's going to get any better. As banged up as the Giants are, I think they're going to be able to beat Arizona at home and come away 3-1 and in not a bad position to go after the Washington Redskins and, you know, be in control of this division. Moving on to Atlanta at Seattle. Seattle, surprising win this past weekend, but that doesn't carry over. This is another situation where I like the road team. I like Ryan to come back from a shaky game. Michael Turner to be more involved. I think overall this could be a big game for them. Seattle's not going to be able to keep up, so I'm taking Atlanta. Denver, Green Bay. Woof. My A&A prediction's not looking so good right now, and I got to tell you, I'd like to pick Denver to just kind of keep it going, but I can't. I mean, Green Bay is going to demolish this team. So, sorry, Bronco fans. It's just not happening right now. Jets at Baltimore, week two in a 3-week road trip. Didn't end up starting very well. Baltimore is going to make it more difficult on them. If you couldn't stop Darren McFadden, are you going to be able to stop Ray Rice? Will Nick Mangold be back? I hate to do it, but I got to pick Baltimore on this one. I think as much as the defense is going to keep the Jets in the game, I just think that the offense isn't going to be able to get it done this week. I'm taking Baltimore. Yes, I know I'm probably going to get shot by Jets fans here in New York. Speaking of Oakland and New England. New England coming off a stunning loss to the Buffalo Bills. I think that's not very good for Oakland. Yes, Darren McFadden will be able to run on the New England defense, but Tom Brady will throw for like 500 yards or something like that and a lot less picks because this secondary is not all that good, and I don't even think it's as good as Buffalo's secondary. I think Brady comes back with a vengeance and has a phenomenal game against Oakland. I'm taking New England. A lot of road teams this week. Not this one, though. Miami goes to San Diego. Miami 0-3. Miami about to be 0-4. San Diego squeaking past Kansas City last week. I think it's going to be a little easier time for them this week. I think that they're going to send Miami back to Miami Beach winless. And I think it's going to be a pretty good game for Phillip Rivers. Had an off game last week against Kansas City. I think he bounces back. And that takes us to Monday night. I guess I'm sorry. I put the Jets-Baltimore Sunday night game in front of, in the middle of the afternoon game. So that Jets-Baltimore game is going to be in the evening, which means my night is going to be less good than it could be. Indianapolis at Tampa Bay. Joseph Addai runs well. That's kind of it for Indianapolis. Tampa Bay, Josh Freeman starting to get his groove back. Mike Williams was back playing well last week. Aurelius Ben is an up and down. LeGarrette Blount is playing well. The defense is good. Kerry Collins is not. Tampa Bay is going to run away with this one. This is not going to be a very good Monday night game. Watch me eat my words, but I'm going with Tampa Bay. So that's my picks. That is my picks for this week as we go into week four. And that is it for the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank everybody for coming by. Aaron will probably be back next week. Who knows? Maybe Aaron will be soloing these at some point when I have stuff come up. But anyway, thank you for listening to me prattle on. Thank you for getting through the first 10 minutes, which the mic was not working right. And I always thank you for letting Aaron and I prattle on and all the different formats that we do. Make sure you check out all the great stuff over at CheeseheadTV.com, not just for Cheeseheads, by the way. A lot of good NFL stuff there. And you Packer fans, get ready for another edition of Packers Transplants and all of the other great audio stuff that are on the Cheesehead Radio feed. And you can always catch my stuff twice a week. My 10-question series posts Thursday or Friday. And, of course, From the Press Box posts Monday night, Tuesday morning. And if you're a Football Guys subscriber, my Fantasy Triage article is up. And I will be starting my Thursday night article in a couple weeks. And if you don't catch me there, sometimes you can catch me over the Jets blog as well. Talking to Brian Bassett about, well, what's going on with Mark Sanchez. That's pretty much it. On behalf of the absent Aaron Nagler, I'm Andrew Garda. Thanks for coming by. Thanks for listening. And thank you for letting us go on and on and on and on and on and on about NFL, because we'd do it even if you weren't here, but we like it better when you are. Thank you very much. See you next time.
You've been listening to The Hard Count with Aaron Nagler and Andrew Garda.
Let's go again!
Word!
Great cash, homie.